The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report, taping this on a Wednesday, running it Thursday. Final football-related podcast for the 2011 season, anyway. We have a couple loose ends to tie up. We couldn't resist bringing this guy back on one last time. Our buddy who stayed with us all through the season here on the BS Report from the NFL.com. NFL.com and NFL Network. Mike Lombardi, what's happening?
Not much, Bill. We're taping Showtime today inside the NFL, so it's a lot of good sound that went into that show. Great highlights on that.
What was your feeling coming out of that game? Do you feel like the Pats left that one on the table, or did you feel like the Giants took it?
Well, I think the Giants made the plays at the end of the game that they had to make. I think the Patriots are going to really regret watching that tape. It'll be a very difficult tape for them to watch because the game went the way they wanted it to go. They did not want to give up a big plays down the field. They gave up one big strike, 36 yards to Manningham, which hurt. But really, when you watch the game, they played it exactly how they wanted it, except the unforced errors. The 12 men on the field cost them a fumble. The Rob Ninkovich offsides, which when you watch it, you're really not sure he is offsides, but they call it because he gets a quick start. That gets them off the field on third down. They had too many unforced errors that all they're left to blame is themselves. So, you know, I think the Patriots are going to watch this tape and say, you know, we had our opportunities and we just didn't come through.
And the Brady Welker throw seems like this is turned into an argument. And I was at the game. It happened right in front of me. And when Brady threw the pass, I thought he overthrew it. I thought it was a really difficult catch for Welker. I thought that play could have potentially gone for six. I thought at the very least that's a 30-yard pass.
If it's executed properly, that's a walk-in touchdown.
Right. So why is everybody blaming Wes Welker?
Well, I think both of them are to blame. Remember, Brady throws the ball on that back shoulder. He's trying to keep it away from the safety. So yep. That free safety could come over, and Chris Collinsworth was talking about it today. You know, that's kind of where he always wanted the ball on the seam. And, you know, away from the safety so he doesn't get blown up. The guy coming from the other side isn't going to hit him. But, look, this is pitch and catch. It's both guys. I mean, Tom should make the throw. Wes should catch the ball. It's the lack of execution. It goes right down to the fact that that's why the Giants are champions. They made the plays that the Patriots didn't make.
Right. And I wrote this after the game. I thought that game came down to two plays. That play along with the Manningham-Manning play, which was just extraordinary. Do you believe that?
You know, I think that play was reminiscent or really a reflection of the Patriots' inability to put the game away. The Patriots went 25 minutes without scoring.
Yep.
They're up 17-10, they're up 17-12, they're up 17-15. And I think ultimately the Manningham play was tremendous, and it was certainly a play that was going to affect them. But I think the Patriots, you know, the way they had given up yards all day, whether they made the Manningham play or not, they were probably going to move the ball down the field. So I thought it was a great play. I'm not sure many quarterbacks would even make that throw, but he did. But this game really came down to the Patriots' inability to continue scoring, especially after they took two drives and scored 14 points. They went 17 unanswered points in the game, and then they just shut it down. They couldn't score anymore. And that's not the Patriots' way of winning football games.
Well, how much of it had to do with the fact that by about halftime, the Giants realized that Gronkowski was a decoy and that he couldn't get off the line, he couldn't jump, he wasn't explosive?
I don't think that was a factor. You know, the two things that weren't a factor, I mean, Gronk, obviously, if he plays and he's healthy, it's a bigger help for the Patriots. That's A. B, you know, the defensive line really didn't pester Brady that much to where he couldn't operate the offense. I think when you watch the tape, Brady had time to throw the ball. I mean, he misses Welker on the seam route. On the next play, he's got Welker wide open on a curl that's going to be a first down. If he throws it to him, I think it's his primary read. He doesn't make the throw. He throws it to Branch. Branch doesn't make the play. They miss the ball. So there's a lot of combinations, but really it wasn't because he was getting sacked repeatedly or getting hit repeatedly. The Patriots had opportunities. They just didn't make them.
And by the way, Branch was open on that play. Brady threw it behind him. And he threw it behind him in a way that the guy was
And in the two-minute drill, if Tom leads him on that play, Branch is probably going to get the ball down to the 30. But this is, as Parcells would say, this is all ifs and buts. You know, it's the reality was the Giants are the champions because they do what champions do. They made the plays.
You know, you look at Tom Brady's career before and after the Pollard play, and you know, people are saying, "Oh, he was only clutch those first couple of years. He wasn't clutch after that." Super Bowl 42, he led them down the field and got the game-winning score. The defense didn't hold it, and they lost. You know, I don't think you can pin that game on him. The Giants' defense was great in that game, but when it mattered, he got the touchdown. Since the Pollard play, hasn't really come through as much. Is it possible that he's just a little bit past his prime at this point?
I don't think so, because past his prime would indicate that he doesn't have enough velocity on the ball. I think a lot of it is the difficult things for teams to do is when you throw the ball short all the time and you're a dink and dunker, it's more difficult to throw it up the field when you have to. And I think where they are offensively is they've gotten in a comfort zone. And I think actually the change of coordinators may be the best thing, not because Billy O'Brien wasn't a good coach. Don't mean that at all. But I think the Patriots have to go back to a little bit of where they were. As much success as they've had offensively, the Patriots need to find a way to throw the ball down the field, make teams defend the width of the field. I think they didn't do that in the game all the time. When they spread the Giants out, by spread I mean when they lined up in four receivers, but the receivers weren't close to each other, they gave the Giants a lot of trouble. When they bunched everybody together, it became a little bit more difficult to throw the ball in those windows. So I think the Patriots are a little bit, you know, they have to go back to find more of their rhythm. And I think Tom needs to kind of go back and to reduce what they do and not be so much dink and dunk and practice throwing the ball. Look, at 07, they threw it up the field. Now they don't.
Well, the one guy who was really their deep threat, Hernandez a little bit, but Gronk was the guy that they would, especially when they were inside the 30, they would send him right down the middle on that play over the middle, and he would just make whatever catch he needed to make. Once that play was taken away, I mean, you went to this game watching Ocho. No safety help at all on Ocho in the fourth quarter. One-on-one with the cornerback, and just, you know, Brady wasn't even looking at him.
No, there's not a lot of confidence, and I think that's where they have to try to find a way to generate confidence, whether it's Ocho Cinco or not. Obviously,
it's not going to be Ocho Cinco. Yeah.
But I think they have to get Tom confident, and that's where it comes down to. When you're a dink and dunk team, you don't have confidence to throw it up the field, whereas Eli has all the confidence in the world, or else he wouldn't have made the throw he made to Manningham.
Tell me about the draft last year. You're looking at the top five picks that they had. None of them had an impact in that game. Nate Solder, I think, played a quarter and a half. The next four picks did not play in the game. Can you win the Super Bowl when you literally get nothing from the draft in the previous April?
Well, I think they got a lot from Solder. I mean, maybe not in that game, but they wouldn't be in the game if Solder wasn't a blue-chip player, which he is. So I think they would. But I think your point's well taken. Dowling's injury hurt them. He goes on IR. That really affected them. You know, losing, not getting those two young running backs. They do need those two young running backs to come along. But part of the problem with their situation is their offense is so complex and so difficult, and Brady is so much about relying on people where they are, that it becomes difficult for a young player to learn what to do. So, you know, I think next year they'll be better when they have an off season to get Vereen ready to play, to get Ridley more, all the reps he needs to get to become better, and they'll take a giant mother may I step forward, just like the Giants draft picks. I mean, Prince Akamara really didn't make an impact on that field. So
the six-rounder did, though, right? The linebacker, Jaquan Williams, he was actually covering Hernandez for that entire second half.
You know, they did, but my point is I don't think that I think Hernandez was open a lot of times, too, when he was covering him.
Yeah.
They just didn't throw him the football.
Well, the Patriots, as you know, have had this philosophy of trade down, stockpile as many picks as possible. Then again, you look at what we watch there, not a lot of blue chippers on the field for the Patriots. Do you think we're ever headed toward a time when Bill Belichick might actually just keep the picks where they are and just go for the best guys?
I think it's all going to still come down to value when they do. I think they have to have the right value. But the key here is they've got to find a receiver that can challenge the outside quadrant of the field, and they've got to be willing to throw the ball to the outside quadrant of the field. It's a double-edged problem.
Right. And that, as you've said over and over again in this podcast, probably the toughest position to get immediate help. Because even you look at like who the Giants had in that game, Hakeem Nicks was a 2009 first rounder. Manningham was a 2008 third rounder. And Cruz, this was his second year. You don't usually see receivers just come in and have a giant impact as rookies. I mean, I think a good test study of that is Torrey Smith on the Ravens, somebody that gave them a deep threat but isn't close to being the player that he's going to be. How do you get that receiver, whether it's free? I mean, is this draft loaded with receivers? Are there free agent receivers you like? How do they do that?
I think you got a combo. And I think you're going to have to get a veteran receiver, whether it's Brandon Lloyd, Reggie Wayne, is it Stevie Johnson? I think you're going to have to spend some money to get one. You know, this cap is going to put the Patriots in a position where they're going to have some flexibility to sign some players. And yeah, they'll be able to add a veteran guy. I think a veteran guy that knows what to do. Obviously, Chad Ochocinco was a veteran guy, but unfortunately, he couldn't get lined up properly. So I think they're going to have to approach this from a double prong, get a young player, get some youth at the receiver, but also get a good, talented player in free agency that could come in and make an impact. I mean, if they had Brandon Lloyd on that field on Sunday, it's a different game, assuming, and this is a big assumption, that they throw the ball down the field. And that's where I think the Giants, that's why the Patriots, conversely, felt good about what they did in the game. They hold the Giants to 20 points, and the Giants are a great explosive offense, and they really didn't make explosive plays. They made Eli work the ball down the field, and he did. He never got anxious. He never panicked. He never made a bad throw. He was fortunate with a lot of throws, but none of them were bad. They were perfectly thrown. A couple of them Spikes could have had his hand on, but he didn't. I think he played great.
Well, Mike, the Patriots could have gotten Brandon Lloyd. They chose not to get him. It's not like he went for a premium
price.
Well,
yeah, but I mean, look, if they would have offered, I mean, the Rams pick is going to be a lot higher than the Patriots pick. We know that in the same round. So they could have.
But I mean, I
think those are the kind of moves that I think you have to look at. I think they've got a nucleus of some really good young players. I mean, this offensive line, you know, Vollmer missed 12 games during the season, and I think he's going to be a good tackle. So they've got some good young players, just like the Giants have a lot of good young players on their team that they can build around, assuming that the quarterback stays healthy, and he will.
I think Lloyd was worth a fourth-round pick. When you think of the difference with Ochocinco versus Lloyd, and the Giants not even looking over at Ochocinco when he was lined up deep.
Well, the Giants weren't looking at anybody from the numbers out, let's be honest.
No. Once it became clear that Gronk had no explosiveness, that was it. You know, Manningham is another guy. You talk about free agents this year. That's a guy that is going to be available. People seem to think that he might get, you know, you're looking at Chicago is going to be going after receivers, I think. I think San Francisco has to do something, right? Is there any other team you might have more people looking for a receiver than receivers?
Right, and it's going to be about the fit. I think one thing we know, that's why I think they've got to go back and redefine themselves offensively. They've become a little bit like the Miami Dolphins when they had Danny Marino and only Clayton and Duper could play. The volume of offense became so great that no young player or any even experienced player could come in and do it. So I think really they have to find a veteran guy that knows what to do, who knows the system and could get him in there, and they got to clean up the system as well.
When you look at what the Giants did and the fact that they won the Super Bowl with the team they had, and you just look at it from a front office perspective, what could be emulated from what they did these past few years?
Well, you've got to be able to, you've got to win the game with a defensive front that can create turnovers. And I think the Giants' defensive line with the blue chip factor that they had in the defensive line was significant. You know, even though they didn't win this game, their pressure, their ability to put constant pressure on their opponents is why championships are built. That's why I think when you take over a team and you build an NFL team, quarterback, offensive, and defensive line are the key components. And as Bill Walsh once said, you don't solve the receiver problem until everything else is fixed. That's why I was critical of Atlanta's draft. I thought that they had too many other needs before they got to Julio Jones and give up their whole draft. So I think the Giants are a very clear indication that if you can build a team with great offensive and defensive lines, you got a chance to win, and a quarterback.
And if you look at the Patriots from 2001 through 2011, basically they've had Brady and Belichick together for 11 years. They won 3 Super Bowls. They lost 2 Super Bowls. They lost in the AFC Championship game once. They had the Bernard Pollard injury when he hit Brady, knocked the season out in 8 minutes. This team won 3 Super Bowls overall with that nucleus. Is that too many, too few, or right about where it should have been?
I think it's awfully good. I think it's incredible. I don't think there's too many people that could duplicate that success. Eli obviously has won two in 8 years with Tom Coughlin, but I think it's hard to duplicate the success the Patriots had. I think the Patriots will still continue to be a good team, just like I think the Giants will continue to be a good team. And, you know, I think it's very difficult. I mean, look, the ball's on the ground three times in a game. They get 12 men on the field one time, which is their own fault. And then they don't get the other two fumbles. The Bradshaw fumble is the game could change dramatically if that ball just – and typically that ball, that fumble, is always goes to the defense, but it squirted, and Chris gives Chris Snead credit. He jumped on it, and he made the play. You know, Hedebo had a chance, and he skirted it to Chris Snead. So I think these games are so close that they come down to so – fractions of plays, you know, that give the team the credit that makes the plays. That's what made them super.
I wrote after the game that the one thing I think we learned this season, and it's been a lesson that's been sitting there, but I think this season more than any other, you feel this way. There were five teams that could have won the Super Bowl this year, and maybe even six if you throw the Saints in, which I'm hesitant to do. I think they were a little bit smoke and mirrors. But, and it came down to, you know, a punt hit somebody in the knee. Somebody fumbles the ball three times, the other team doesn't get any of them. The guy catches the winning TD in the end zone and gets stripped. Guy misses a 32-yard field goal. Like these little moments. Is that just what this league is now? You want to get into that exclusive club of the five or six teams that can win, and then it becomes poker, basically?
Basically, that's what it is. I mean, let's face it. If Welker, if they connect on the throw, and that throw hits Welker as any throw, and I'm watching it, it hits him in the hands. You know, he catches that ball 99 out of 100 times. He makes that catch, the game's over. And all we're talking about on this podcast is the Giants wasting two timeouts.
Oh, yeah, the Eli thing.
That's all we're doing. And so that's how close it is. Remember, this is 2 years in a row now where the Super Bowl winner, not just a playoff team, the Super Bowl winner is just about two plays away from not getting in the playoffs. If Miles Austin catches that pass and if they can make a field goal, the Cowboys are in the playoffs and the Giants aren't.
Right. So you look at the Niners, because I'm already thinking about next year because I don't want to think about last year anymore. The Niners were pretty close last year. They watched this game. Don't they feel like they're one or two guys away now from being the best team in the league, or am I crazy?
No, I think they do. I think the key for the Niners is the level of comps going to rise. How they handle success is going to be important. Can they get the same kind of turnovers next year that they got this year? Because they got a lot of them. Yeah. People are going to play them differently. So it's going to be a difference. Every season's a new season, and I don't think you can assume anything with the season.
Because they were, I know you don't like to talk about gambling, but it has to be mentioned, they're 20-1 to win the Super Bowl, which seems pretty low to me. I mean, I'm sorry, pretty high to me. The favorites right now are the Packers at 5-1. Then the Saints are 6-1. The Patriots are 7-1, which I was surprised by because they have two first-round picks and two second-round picks and a pretty good nucleus. I don't think they're going to lose anybody. When you think about next year, what team, you know, we haven't had the draft yet, obviously. We haven't had free agency. But what team do you think is in the best position to be the favorite next year right now?
I think you have to give it to Green Bay. They're going to be better on defense. They're still going to bring back the nucleus of their offensive players. And they're going to be able to still have the same kind of success offensively that they had. Now they've got to get better defensively. I think Pittsburgh's got, you know, some issues with their cap, but certainly they could come back next year, assuming that their defense isn't too old. They could come back. Baltimore, you know, they've got to hope that their defense isn't too old. They repair their offensive line with some players. I think this league's wide open. I think it's so hard. I'll give you a surprise team. I think Arizona, you know, they've won seven of the last eight games. You know, they were tremendous down the stretch. If they get quarterbacking play, hypothetically, let's say they get a Kurt Warner-type quarterbacking play out of that team and they do a couple moves in free agency, they could easily be sitting here.
Well, they're 40-1 right. They're 40-1 right now, and that is a possible Peyton Manning destination.
Right.
Is that what you're inferring?
Well, I'm just saying if they could get blue-chip quarterbacking, I think this what we're in now is a league of blue chip quarterbacking and blue chip coaching. And if you have a blue chip coach and you have a blue chip quarterback and you have a way to make adjustments during the season and kind of fill some holes in, I think you got a chance. I mean, the Saints are as good as anybody. I mean, look, they were bad on defense. They changed defensive coordinators. They'll be better. Their offense is still going to be as good, whether they lose Colston or they don't sign Meacham. Whatever they do, they'll still be effective because they have a quarterback and they have a blue-chip coach.
We had you came on the BS Report from the Bud Light Hotel last week on Thursday, and then the next day we had Schefter, and he gave us five teams that he thought Manning might go to. And, you know, it seems like he's healthy. I still think it's a little dubious that somebody's had three neck surgeries is just going to be rolling out there with the same
It's unbelievable. People say he's been cleared to play. Well, I've been cleared to paint the Sistine Chapel, and I'm not going to be able to do it.
Right.
You know, it's not – it's cleared to play – and being able to play are two different things. And I want Peyton Manning to play football more than anybody. I love watching him play. It's better for the league. But I'm with you, Bill. His nerve has not regenerated. He's had three neck surgeries.
Right.
These are difficult things. And he hasn't even been to doctors of other teams. It's just it's unfair to assume he can take, you know, of course the 76ers did this with Elton Brand. You know, oh, no problem. He's coming off an Achilles injury. He'll be able to bounce and step up. We'll give him $80 million guaranteed. No problem. How'd that work out?
Right. Well, let's say, you know, I think if anybody can play at a different speed, it would be Peyton because he's so smart, all the audible stuff like that. Like, even if he's 70% what he was physically, I still think he could have a huge impact when you think about it's basically like you're hiring one of the best offensive coordinators to stand at the line of scrimmage and pick apart teams. So let's say that
you just don't change systems that quickly and have success. It's going to take
some
time.
You're against this. You're against trading for Manning, it sounds like.
I'm not against it. I'm not sure it's realistic. I think when we get into those five destination points for Peyton Manning, I think it's unrealistic to assume because he can't throw the ball. I've talked to people who have caught the ball for him. He can't throw the ball to his left.
Oof.
He can't throw the ball across his body because he doesn't feel it. People that catch the ball for him say that he doesn't really have the velocity on the ball yet.
Well, that's one more side than Tim Tebow can throw to.
Right, but also Tim Tebow's 250 pounds and can run like a fullback. I don't think there's, you know, do you want this guy running for his life for you?
No. Well,
you know, so it's a great off-season story, but until he gets cleared medically and he's not going to be cleared by people that don't know. I mean, he's going to only be cleared by true doctors that he could actually play in the game.
All right, well, let's say it comes back to some degree and he's enough of an impact guy that somebody trades for him. I don't think that 70% of Peyton Manning swings anything for the Jets or the Redskins because you and I have talked in detail about the Jets and how many issues they have. Peyton Manning at 70% is not going to be the magic elixir for that team. The Redskins, I also think, need a lot more than 70% Peyton Manning. But if he goes to Arizona or if he goes to Tennessee, that's a little more interesting.
Agreed. I mean, if you put a blue chip quarterback on Arizona and they sign Campbell back, the defensive lineman, and they fix the right tackle, and they do some things to the team with Larry Fitzgerald and the defense, you know, they didn't get any sacks out of their outside backers. I mean, they're a 34 defense, and they get four sacks out of their outside backers total from Joey Porter and Clark Hagans. You know, so that's not, you know, that ain't going to be good enough.
Did you see any of these coaching? We never talked about coaches on the during the last few weeks. Any coaching hires you've seen so far that make you think could have a possible Jim Harbaugh-like impact on the franchise?
I think the Siano hire in Tampa is going to have really huge effect because he's coming into a team that has some players that it's going to take a transitional period, but he's going to bring toughness to the team, something they need desperately.
And I think a little bit similar to maybe. You know, it's partly that he's good and partly that he's replacing somebody who was so bad that the combination of those two things somehow pushes a team up.
And he does the one thing really well that the team needs, which is he's be tough.
Yeah.
Which is create some toughness. Now, he's in a tough division. You know, he's in a tough situation, he's in a tough division. But I think he could bring something to the table that could create a problem. You know, I think Jeff Fisher is going to have a hard time making that team better until he gets through and gets a bunch of new players. I think that's going to be an issue. I think he, you know, when you look at Miami, I think it's going to be interesting to see where they go quarterbacking. So, you know, Indianapolis is going to be a whole rebuilding process. So Kansas City, a lot of guys coming back. They could be better, but do they get a blue-chip quarterback in there? I don't know.
if you'd been hired by a team to run it, and you could have picked any coach that was out there, who would you have gone after?
Well, I think Josh McDaniels, people laugh at me. I think Josh McDaniels is an outstanding coach. I think the next time he becomes a head coach, it's going to be a lot like Belichick. They have a lot of similarities. You know, people laughed when I said Belichick would be a great head coach in 96. You know, because he was a good coach in Cleveland. It just was the circumstances. But besides Josh, I think Chip Kelly at Oregon is going to be a great NFL coach when he decides he wants to come in, because he knows how to build a program. He knows how to be a head coach. I think what that taught us in the Super Bowl is, and especially this time of year, when you watch teams, I think you need to find teams that have coaches that are truly head coaches, not just calling plays and trying to manage the game through that.
McDaniels, does he come back to the Patriots and take over the Bill O'Brien spot?
He comes back, he takes it over, and I think he'll redefine the offense. I think it'll become a little different. It'll become a little bit more power, a little bit more back to where they were, let's say, in 07.
Okay. And I got to ask, you know Belichick, you're close to him. Rumors have it you were out to dinner with him last week in Indianapolis.
A couple times. I can confirm.
How much longer does he...
How about that?
Met Drake, three of the greats.
Yeah, Drake. I didn't even know who he was. My son said to me, "There's Drake," and I said, "Unless he breaks out into Badlands, I have no idea who he is."
Also, one of the most unlikely Canadians. He's a Canadian. So, how long does Belichick keep doing this?
You know, people ask me that, and you know, the guy loves his job, just like Tom Coughlin. They both love their job. They have very few hobbies, and every year they do their job, they get better at their job. I think he's at least five more years coaching. I would be shocked if he went less than that.
Right.
I will say this. I really truly believe in my heart that he'll coach beyond Tom Brady's career.
Wow. That's interesting. That's a little nugget right there. You know, remember that column I wrote, I'm going to say 5 years ago? It was the speed limit corollary, and it was about coaches after they hit 55 – they stopped being as competent, and I based it around what happened to Bill Parcells and some others. Now here we are a few years later. We're in the Super Bowl. Coughlin's 65. I think Belichick is 60 at this point.
He'll turn 60 in April.
So what's changed here, or was that just a stupid theory to begin with?
Well, I think that both these guys, Coughlin and Belichick, Tom Coughlin is all about religion, his religion. He's all about his faith, his family. And he's all about the job, and nothing really could get in the way of that. I mean, you know, 2 weeks from today, Tom Coughlin will be sitting on the 20-yard line, timing 20s in the combine, and get every one, and he won't leave until the last one runs. He loves his job, and the success doesn't spoil him. Belichick loves his job, and success doesn't spoil him. Belichick will put this behind him. He'll redefine what he needs to do with his football team. And every year, like he says, is really a new year. And I think that ultimately what it is, they're never satisfied with what they have.
All right. So we have those two coaches that are like that. Who else is on that list? I think we'd both put Jim Harbaugh on that list, even though it's been an early sample size. But he's
I think
on there
Jim
for
and
me.
John Harbaugh are both coaches that like their job and do it. I think Sean Payton likes his job, and I think he gets better at it when he does it. I think coaches that don't mind confrontation, that embrace it, that are willing to change with their team, are the ones that endure.
Would you put Mike Tomlin on that list?
Yeah,
kind of borderline.
Because Mike Tomlin is willing to make some tough decisions. He, you know, obviously got rid of his offensive coordinator. I'm not saying that was the right thing to do, but he's willing to make some tough decisions. Plus, I think Mike Tomlin has, you know, he has that passion for the game that he loves. And I think Mike Tomlin would coach at William & Mary, or he'd coach at Pitt. He likes coaching.
All right, and I guess there would be one more possible name. I'm looking at Lovie Smith. I mean, you can't argue with how many times they've been in the playoffs and stuff. I mean, they never gets mentioned, but you wouldn't put him on that list?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lovie Smith has a system of what he likes to do. I think he's obviously been through some changes offensively. You know, and I think Mike McCarthy's a lot like Belichick, and he's a lot like Coughlin.
Yeah,
I think that's his life.
Yeah.
I think
Andy
it's their
Reed?
Life.
Andy
Reid to a degree, yeah, but I think Andy Reid is more, you know, I don't know if Andy Reid, his teams ever get that sense of complete toughness that you have to have to win the tough games.
Mm.
But he's a fine football coach, and I think he's hard to replace.
Don't get all political on me and make sure you say something nice about each guy. I know what you're up to. So you think the Rutgers coach potentially could be on this list someday?
I think the Rutgers coach is, brings the, what Tampa needed, the Rutgers coach can provide. Now, they're going to have to straighten some things out on offense. They're going to have to be, there's going to be a change of the roster because it's going to be interesting to see the dynamics between the Rutgers coach and the general manager, because the general manager has brought all the players in there. And yeah. So that general manager is going to want to protect his players, and I'm sure that locker room is going to go through a transformation.
I got to ask you about the draft, even though it's a couple months away. So everybody has penciled in luck. We've gone through this process where the college football season happened. People were staring at luck too long. They started picking them apart a little bit. The exact same thing has happened in basketball a few times. I remember it happened with Chris Paul. People started looking at Chris Paul. Oh, he's too short. You know, they go, you go from being in love with somebody to being, to, it's like staring at the supermodel and going, her butt's like a tiny bit too beefy. And then you just, once you start doing that, it's stupid. Luck should be the first pick, but this Griffin is really exciting. And I feel like, the combination of how he finished last season, plus when he goes to these combines, is there a chance that he passes Luck as the number one pick?
I think there is a chance. I don't think it'll happen, but I do think there is a chance. There was rumors, and these are only rumors, that the Polians like Griffith better than Luck. And look, I think you're right. The problem is whenever you, Bill Walsh used to say this all the time, we always pick on the guy who has too much tape, but we never yep. pick on the guy who only has two or three games. We always right. pick on the player who's played too much because there's something to pick on. Every player is not perfect. So you see that, and I think what you see – but Griffith has a lot of tape as well. So, but he also provides a little uniqueness to what he does offensively. And I think the Cam Newton success, not that Griffith's going to be like Cam Newton in terms of enduring some of those hits that, that Cam can do, but he brings an element to the team that's pretty popular right now, throwing the football, moving, and being able to do some things with his feet on the move and still throwing it up the field and still giving you a single wing type offense with a complete passing game.
And I think him and Cam have something in common. They both have that wow factor, which I think is really an important thing with quarterbacks and something that gets overlooked sometimes. The guy that could just pull a play out of his butt and say, and I think Roethlisberger can do this, where he's supposed to be sacked and he, you know, can break away, fight off somebody, completes a 3rd and 16. That throw Eli made to Manningham, same thing. Brady's like that. Aaron Rodgers is like that. Breeze is like that. Cam Newton is definitely like that. I feel like Griffin is like that. And yeah. I keep reading these mock drafts, and people have him penciled in as at number 4. Because
that won't happen. I can tell you right now. On this
There's no way he goes lower than 2. It's impossible.
He is the second pick in the draft. Now, I can't tell you which team's going to have that pick, but
right.
I can promise you he will be the second pick. He could be the first pick. I can't promise you that. But I know Luck and Griffith are going 1-2 in some combination. That I can tell you. I can promise that.
People, anybody who makes a mock draft from this day forward, who puts RG3 going 4th, just stop. Just tear up. Just delete the Microsoft Word document. Start another one.
It's like I tell people all the time, whenever you have 6 or 7 wide receivers in a mock draft, just don't look at it anymore. Because that's easy to put receivers in the mock drafts, but it's hard to draft them in the first round.
So we think the Rams will parlay. Probably Cleveland's 4, right?
Yeah.
So Cleveland
that's
just
gonna
says,
be the interesting team, Cleveland, because Cleveland wants to be an under-center team. Cleveland doesn't want to be an all-shotgun team. And I think the team that drafts Robert Griffith needs to be a little bit – he's going to be shorter. It needs to be more of an all – not an all-shotgun team, but a lot of shotgun. So if the Browns go there, then Brad Childress, the new offensive coordinator, and Pat Shurmur, the head coach, probably will have to modify what they do.
Oh, my Lord. You had to bring him up, didn't you? I thought we were going to be able to get to the podcast. The poor Browns fans. What more has to happen to Cleveland fans? Now they have Brad Childress as their offensive coordinator. Are you kidding me? Can we stop torturing Cleveland fans?
That's supposed to spice up their offense.
Oh, my God. It feels like there was some sort of mass conspiracy just to torture Cleveland fans and make them feel terrible. Kyrie Irving's like the best thing that's happened to them in eons. I mean, he's a legit player. Thank God for him, or else they'd all be sticking their heads in the oven. It seems to me, you know, I'm looking at Minnesota at 3. That gets complicated because you trade for RG3, but then you also have to figure out what to do with Ponder, and you're selling him for 50 cents on the dollar. The Rams at 4, I'm sorry. The Rams at two. The Browns at four. As you said, maybe that's not the type of guy they'd go for. But then you go to five and six. The Redskins are six. If there's ever a team that would say, you know what, screw it. We'll pay 150 cents in the dollar. You tell us what we need to give you to get this guy. And the Rams say, all right, well, we'll take the sixth pick. You give us your number one next year. And you give us a number two this year and a number three next year. And then we also want one of your young players. I think the Redskins do it. I mean, wouldn't the Redskins overpay for him? All of a sudden, they're on the map.
I think he fits what Mike Shanahan wants to do. I think he fits really well. The bootleg, the nakeds, keeping him on the move, a lot of play action. I think he would be very good in that offense. I think he would. I'm not sure, you know, they want to give up all those assets. I think it's interesting. The Redskins will have a ton of cap room this offseason. We'll see how much they want to spend on if they can get a big-time receiver. And if they can take care of some of their needs in terms of free agency, they could be a team that could compete if they can solve the quarterback issue.
Shanahan's always been a guy that's gone after blue chip guys. Snyder is a guy who has always been willing to make whatever splash he needs to make, and he doesn't care about the price. For me, that's the team. I think that's where he goes, and I think if you're the Rams and you play this correctly, and all you have to do is drop down four spots, you already have a quarterback. You're still in the top six, which in this draft, you don't want to fall out of that top six, right? How deep does it go with blue chippers? Like the blue,
I don't know the draft
like
yet.
Superstars.
I got to really get into it. But I think the other part to add to your theory here on the Rams-Redskins is Mike Shanahan and Jeff Fisher are very close.
Oh.
So if there's a trade to be made there, it'll happen between those two.
Well, you have the Justin Blackmon will not go out of the top four, correct?
Yep.
At this point. Oh, you know who has a mock draft for us right now? Mel Kiper. He has Blackmon. See, Mel Kiper. I might have to have him on. He has Blackmon going second. There's just no way. Griffin's going to be the second pick.
Griffin's going to be the second pick. I don't care what anybody says. It's going to happen. Just put it in. Now, we don't know the team he's going to yet, and the Rams are going to hold an auction. And if the Rams are smart, they're going to play it well. They're going to try to entice as many people into this thing as they possibly can. And for the Rams, they want RG3 to measure 6'2". They want RG3 to throw the ball 87 yards. They want RG3 to be, which he already is, a tremendous kid who works hard. I mean, they're going to want them all.
Well, you have the giant left tackle from USC. Somebody always grabs whoever the marquee
left
tackle.
Well, that would be Minnesota. They don't have a left tackle. They're not going to go back with Charlie Johnson at left tackle. So Minnesota is going to try to get – and, you know, and remember this. The draft, it doesn't cost you as much anymore now. The draft is economically friendly.
So there's
three.
So
you're going to see – by that, you're going to see more trades now.
But you think Minnesota really passes on Blackmon?
Oh, I think they'll pass on a receiver in order to get the left tackle. They can't block anybody. They're not going to. Christian Ponder won't survive if they don't.
All right, so that brings the Browns up at four. They jump on Blackmon, obviously. They were the first NFL team I think ever that didn't have a receiver start on anyone's fantasy team. So Blackmon goes four, and then now you're looking at it. Kind of does drop off after that top four. So if you're the Rams, maybe you want the Browns, because now you're thinking all I have to do is move down two spots and we get either the left tackle or we get
the Rams already
get
picked the left tackle. You know, they've already
before. But he was a stiff though,
they
right?
They still need one. I mean, they picked him two overall. They still need one.
So those are two neat guys for them.
Yeah, you got to. I don't know the draft yet, so pass rushers are going to play into effect. Somebody who can rush the passers going in the top five. Trust me.
Kiper, he has number seven, Quinton Coples, defensive end from North Carolina. That's the first like pass rusher. And then Courtney Upshaw, he has 10th. This is going to be a great draft. I'm a case by case basis for when to throw myself in a draft. I think this one's going to be awesome because I do think RG3 has a chance to pass luck. I do think he's going to be the second pick. And there's a lot of jock in there. There's teams that won't be that far away. If they're able to grab somebody, even look at like Minnesota, they got a left tackle. And, I don't know. I didn't feel like that team was that bad. Peterson.
They need a lot of help on
Peterson. I forgot about Peterson.
Secondary help.
Well, Peterson's gone anyway. The Browns weren't that bad either. Last question. So you watch the tape, Super Bowl 46. You listen to all the sound bites. You watched the coach's tape, I assumed. Was there anything that jumped out at you when you were soaking in all this stuff well after the fact?
Oh, I think the missed opportunities of the Patriots. I think that they're going to have a hard time watching the tape and, you know, and seeing what they did, because they did the things they wanted to do. They kept Eli from making big plays, and they did a very good job in pass protection. They only had the ball 22 minutes, and yet they had over 350 yards of offense, or three, I don't know what they had, but they had a lot of yards. They just didn't make any chunks of yards down the field. And I think the things that cost them in this game were their inability to throw the ball outside. So what jumped off me on the tape were the Giants were very patient. They were very well coached. They didn't turn the ball over. They were able to make all the plays they had to make, and the Patriots didn't make even one play they had to make.
If you had to vote for one Sixer to make the All-Star team, who would it be?
One Sixer to make the All-Star team. You know, I would probably – that's an interesting question, because, to be honest with you, I think Drew Holiday is their best player.
I do too.
I think he's their best player. I think he could be really better. I mean, he has to dish and do things to help other people and facilitate. But I think when he wants to be a great player, he can just be a great player.
I will say this. I think Andre Iguodala is their most indispensable player. I think they could survive without Drew Holiday for 10 games. I do not think they could survive at the level they're at without Iguodala.
He played really well. I mean, when you get out-rebounded like they did the other night, and still beat the Lakers. Tonight will be interesting. The Spurs at home, and they have trouble with, you know, they have trouble with big teams. So that's why I keep working the trade checker out and to see if we can come up with a trade, but it's hard to do. They're going to have to give up an asset to get a big guy.
Kamen's out there.
I know, and nobody here in Philly wants him. I'm the only guy in Philadelphia that wants Kamen. They say as soon as you buy Kamen, you'll hate him.
I'd actually really enjoy it. I'd enjoy it if you had to root for Kamen, because he is one of those guys that, if you're only following him by the box score, it looks awesome. Then when you watch him, it's like, oh.
But that's the key point right there. That's why basketball, you learn something about football watching basketball, because when you do free agency, if you just look at a guy on a brief second in free agency and just say you do two tapes on him, you think, I can live with him. But free agency, you have to watch him play the entire season. And then answer the question, could I live with that? Could I live with DeSean Jackson's drops? Can I live with that? And if the answer is yes, then go ahead and sign him. But you better get to that point.
Well, that's why Russell Westbrook's so interesting. And he's somebody that I don't know if the stats have totally figured out how to account for what he does, because he takes terrible shots. He doesn't totally take care of the ball. On the other side, he's one of the three or four best athletes in the league and makes 10 or 11 plays per game that are just so off the charts, you know, whether it's some crazy offensive rebound or whatever. And I just think when you add everything up and the pace that he plays and how good of an athlete he is, and anytime they have a fast break, that team just goes, and the overall sum is better than probably what the stats say. And I had the same thing for James Harden, who's just so much fun to play with and does everything so well and doesn't care if he shoots, and you know, and I think that is the difference. And that's why in baseball you can account for everything, and in basketball you can't.
And that's why in football you can't always read the stats and say this guy had X amount or do that. You really got to kind of dig into it and watch him play over a course of time and really see if you can live with it.
You know, it's interesting. According to Hollinger's PR, Westbrook and Harden are both in the top 20, as well as a certain Sixer. Can you guess what Sixer?
I lost you for a second.
In Hollinger's PR rating, which basically ranks offense, there is a Sixer ranked number 18. Can you guess which Sixer it is?
Lou Williams.
Lou Williams. Ding, ding.
Yes, the Dory Prizes. You know, I'll tell you, if Lou Williams built his body where he was a little stronger in his upper body, where he could finish some of those when he gets, because he can get to the rim as well as anybody. He really can. Right. I mean, he took over the game against the Lakers the other night, and they were down 5, and he brought them back, and Iguodala played great defense against Kobe, and they were able to get a few rebounds. But without his instant offense coming off the bench, I think they would be in trouble.
He is Jamal Crawford 2.0.
Yeah, I could see that.
And they got him for a very decent deal. Last question, even though I already asked the last question. Are you the GM of an NFL team in 2 months?
In 2 months, no, I don't think so. I think I'm going to be back on the podcast talking about how Robert Griffith's going the number two overall.
RG3.
RG3.
Mr. Lombardi, so you're going to the scouting combine, right?
I will be back in Indianapolis killing more cows in 2 weeks.
I actually, I'm proud to say I did see a vegetable on Saturday night and ate it. It was
hard to do.
It was asparagus.
I mean, and they say the best steakhouse in Indy isn't even downtown. It's a place called Peterson's, which is right outside of town.
Interesting. I was happy for Indy that everybody came away really excited about it. Although, you know, the sleeper with Indy is that they put on that Indy 500 every year. They're used to a ton of people coming. Even the scouting combine, they're used to some people coming. But they didn't have that deer in the headlights, unorganized look that you always see at these Super Bowls. I mean, Jacksonville was the worst. Jacksonville knew they were hosting the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, Indy's great. I mean, the problem, Indy needed about 3 or 4 more restaurants and a couple more hotels, but it's a tremendous town. And I would like to get the head count on how many cows gave up their life for that week. Because there was a lot of beef in that building. I mean, that has to be the record for the most cows gone.
Yeah, Indy had that, the Conrad Hotel was the only, like, quote-unquote luxury hotel.
Now, is the Bud Light Hotel still the Bud Light Hotel, or does it go back to the Hampton Inn today?
It goes back to the Hampton Inn. That's where I stayed. I love the Bud Light Hotel. And then somehow St. Elmo's was considered like the best eating experience, and it is a slightly above-average steakhouse.
Well,
if you put it anywhere else in the country, you'd be like, it's all right.
No, you take away the shrimp cocktail, and I don't know if it survives. That's the thing people don't realize and understand. The shrimp cocktail is the lure. It's the trap.
We had a lot of arguments about the shrimp cocktail because the cocktail sauce was like a 13 out of 10, and the actual shrimp was probably like a 6.
Yeah, well, bury it. They don't even let you put the cocktail sauce onto it. They cover up the shrimp. The shrimp are hidden.
Right, but the underrated.
It's pretty good marketing technique on how they do it. You don't even know if you're getting jumbo shrimp, even though they're charging you like you are.
The underrated, though, which didn't get advertised as well, was the Bloody Marys.
You know, somebody told me they were great. They had the same cocktail.
They're fantastic. Oh, yeah. I watched Joe House drink about 2 of them in 10 minutes, and then he had 7 shrimp cocktail and then went into a diabetic coma for the next half hour for all the cocktail sauce. It just ate away at his nerves like an alien. But, it was great. And, you know, I think we're all lucky to be able to go to a sporting event like that, spend the week and do media stuff and write about it and go to the game and the whole thing. And this was just a really fun weekend. We also caught a break with the weather, and everybody's talking about moving Indy into this permanent Super Bowl rotation. I'm not against it, but I do think we have to mention that the year before, same exact time, suppose there was 3 inches of ice on the roads.
Yeah, it would have been much more difficult had, you know, just to wait in line for the zip line with snow coming down. But I think, you know, I'm there during the combine and we get snow and you can move around fairly well. I mean, it's a cold walk. It's a cold walk back to your hotel.
Yeah. The important lesson is that when everything is compact in a downtown like that, because Denver's like this too. Denver was my favorite NBA All-Star weekend so far because nice downtown. You could walk around. You don't have to say where you're staying.
New Orleans is incredible. Yeah, New Orleans is a great Super Bowl. I'm hoping you take over. What hotel is going to be the Simmons Hotel next year?
I don't know. It would be interesting to see if I can pull off the New Orleans Super Bowl. And I'll be age 43 at that point. I'll be like a little bit like Peyton Manning. I'll have some nerve damage. I won't be able to throw to my left. I don't know. I barely handled this week. I think I have permanent bronchitis now. But that New Orleans could be something else. And that, you know, it's also looking like that could be the Saints. What if the Saints are what if we finally break the streak of the first team ever to host its own Super Bowl?
I just would hate to be, you know, that the last time, my first Super Bowl, I was with the Niners and we played it in Palo Alto. So it's possible. It's doable.
Is that true?
Yes.
How much of an advantage was that, though?
I was too young to really know. I was too busy picking up Bill Walsh's dry cleaning, so I'd have no idea really what the advantage was.
All right. Michael Bardi, maybe we'll talk to you after the combines. Enjoy the break. Great work this season. We loved having you. The listeners loved having you. Thanks for everything.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. All right, before we go, I wanted to call my buddy J-Bug at work. He's working at an undisclosed office in Massachusetts, diehard Boston fan. We've called him on the BS Report a couple times. I just want to make sure that people back home aren't too mad about this Tom Brady and the Giselle and all this stuff. I need to hear it from him. I haven't talked to him yet. I haven't talked to him since the game other than some texts. We're going to call him right now on the BS Report. He does not know we're calling.
This is Jason Buggy.
Bug.
Yeah.
What's happening? It's your old pal.
Hey,
Bill.
Billy. What's going on, man?
You're in the podcast, buddy, so don't say anything too offensive. Just give us quickly. We're taping this on a Wednesday. Just give us the mood back home right now.
Ooh. It's it's not quite like 2007. I can tell you that, but I think things are starting to calm down. It's Wednesday now, but I can tell you that Monday and Tuesday was embarrassing almost. Just hearing people on the radio and everyone's complaining about Brady, then everyone's complaining about Welker, and then everyone's now backing up Welker and saying, no, no, that was an impossible catch. It's Brady. It's, you know, you heard the Yoko Ono, Giselle Bundchen, commentary, and it's,
yeah.
I think, you know what? I think, honestly, within 2 days, everything's done, and people are moving on.
And getting excited about the draft and the fact that we have two first-round picks?
That's it. I'm convinced. I don't know about everyone else, and I didn't get myself psyched up for this Super Bowl. I was a little bit nervous going in anyway, so maybe I wasn't as surprised as some, but.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Based on the airwaves and what people are talking about, the callers are questioning Brady, and then you have the defenders coming out. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, the guy's won 3 Super Bowls. He's taken us to 5 Super Bowls, AFC Championship game. I'll take that.
Well, with that said, you had a couple angry Brady texts on Sunday night. Were those a passion for you?
I also said that Ocho was going to score a touchdown after he made that catch, so I probably sent you a couple crazy texts, or that we were going to blow him out and they probably jinxed him. So,
nah.
Yeah, I got a little upset. I think, you know what? After seeing the impromptu interview with Giselle as well, I thought it was kind of funny, but
yeah.
I don't know. It was the heat of the moment. I was disappointed. You're catching me off guard. But yeah,
I know, but that's good. I'm glad I am. So listen, you've been in Mass your whole life, and I touched on this a little in my column after the game. With Brady, it is a really interesting dynamic because this is a guy that won us 3 Super Bowls, and I think had a chance to be on the level of Bird, Russell, all these guys. Then he moves to New York. He starts dating Giselle. He moves to California. He's seen wearing a Yankee cap. He makes an Uggs commercial. He does the long hair thing.
You're fueling the fire. You're fueling the fire.
Well,
right
listen,
now.
I'm just saying.
You're feeding me. You're feeding me.
No, listen.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, you have this. You've been going to Pats games for 20 years with a crew that is high comedy to say the least, including your friend Grover.
Shall we say representative of Massachusetts?
I would say it's a pretty decent sample size, yes. And some of the things that maybe Tom Brady has, some of the choices that he's made, maybe not the choices some of the people in that sample size might respond to. Is there a chance that things might turn against Brady here? Is there a chance?
No way. For 3 or 4 days, yes. Yes, for 3 or 4, they have. I mean, you listen to the radio, you read the papers, they have, but I guarantee you 4 or 5 days from now, forget it. It's all done. And
good.
People can't wait till next year.
Good.
I'm convinced of it.
That's the message I wanted to get across. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's the message to get out there.
People are bummed out. People are pissed. But
yeah.
We just lost the Super Bowl. I mean, fortunately, you know what? The it used to be, I guess. But now it's not the case. The average fan can't go onto the Boston Globe and write a scathing article and then just print it up. But, oh, wait, they can. you never want to do that. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So.
I think the appreciation of what what we had the last 11 years and the fact that this was the league's most relevant franchise from 01 through 11 and that we made five Super Bowls, probably could have won five or six with a couple breaks. Brady is one of the seven or eight best quarterbacks ever. And when you look at where we were in 2000 and how bummed everyone was, and we used to hang out, we used to go to those Celtic games together, and we used to watch Drew go 6-10 and think, oh, this guy doesn't have it. And nobody gave a crap about the Bruins, and the Red Sox were an absolute mess and had the worst owners on the planet. I think it's easy to forget that that wasn't that long ago. And that,
you know, it was not that long. I'm sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, that's all I had to say.
You know who I'm envious of? Detroit. I'm envious of a Detroit. Do you remember, in actually Detroit last year, do you remember Drew's first season when I think we were 0-11 and then we ended up going 5-11? The last game of the year, he hit
Miami.
I think it was Timpson. He hit him, knocked Miami out of the playoffs. We won five games. I've never been more excited as a Pats fan. Well, up to that point in my life, I'd never been more excited. There's nothing better than being on the upswing and feeling things are changing. And that's, you know, right now we can't, all of us are so pissed right now. We're saying stupid things. But, I mean, the past 11 years have been awesome. Insane.
Right.
Insanity. I mean,
I remember
if we went 5-11. Could you imagine if we won nine games, how crazy this place would be? We won 13 games this year. We went to the Super Bowl. How the hell did we get into the Super Bowl? How did we get by Baltimore? We didn't even belong in the Super Bowl. It's crazy.
I know.
Absolutely
and that's,
crazy.
That was the sneaky thing about this Pats season, was that it was by far the weakest of the five teams. I mean, even of the five Super Bowl teams we had, even the 0-1 team, at least that team could D up. That team, we knew the defense was going to show up. You and I, we backed that sentiment financially that year, too, which I'm proud of. But we knew that defense was going to hit those Ram pretty boys and knock them around, and we'd have a chance to win that game. And this team, I do feel like crippled Gronk. You throw in crippled Gronk, which is not enough made of that and how much he meant to the team. It's just, it changed the offense completely. Once you took him out of the game, it was a really – it's an above-average team, but that's about it. I mean, I don't think that was a Super Bowl team we watched during that game.
Well, take the Patriots out of that game. It was a great freaking game.
It really was.
It was a great game. Are you
dramatic.
Kidding me? With that, I mean, how did they? I don't even know how they held the Giants to the points that they held them to.
It's dramatic.
Should they not have put up? You know, with that defense, should they not have put up 42 points? Would you have been surprised if the Giants threw down 42 points? I'm going to get killed. My friends are going to absolutely slay me for saying all this. But can you believe we held them to the points we held them to?
We had that bend but don't break thing where we had we were basically giving up 6 yards a play, but not giving up 30 yards for one play. And that's all they cared about. And it worked.
It worked. You know what, though? It didn't work. Because at the end of the day, when the defense is on the field that long, sooner or later, and they went down and they marched down because they were done. D was toast and they were done.
Well, I meant it worked from the standpoint of we had midfield five minutes to go, two first downs, we win the Super Bowl. So the defense did their job up to that specific point.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It worked from that perspective. And had we got the first down, and you have to believe Welker catches that, then they're running the clock out. They're going to get another first down. And I think the Giants had one timeout left. So they're running it down to the two-minute warning, and then that was it. They were going to get – if they got one more first down, the game's over.
If I had said to you on Saturday night, the Patriots are going to be leading by 2 points with 5 minutes to go, Gronk is going to be 45% of what he normally is, but he'll be playing, and we will need two first downs to win the Super Bowl, would you have said we're going to win the Super Bowl?
If it was against any other team, I would have said absolutely. But, again, I did not feel good going into the game. I just I didn't feel good about it. I think you know that too. I didn't feel good about it.
Well,
so,
it wasn't the best Patriots.
I was a fan. I was hopeful, but I just did not feel that. But once we went out, once we came in, we ended with the score and went into the third quarter with the score. I thought we were going to blow them out, and I was like, "Wow, we're going to blow these guys out." And that didn't happen. So no, because look what happened the last times we played them. We played these guys. Don't forget, we played them in the preseason. They played us tight every time we played them in the regular season and then the last Super Bowl, so they know us. I mean, it just, I don't know, it just seems like we can't get over the hump with these guys. I don't get it. I don't understand it. They're a good team. I don't know how they only won nine games this year.
Well,
because
guys got hurt on their front four, and that was really what fueled their team. I can tell you this, though. In the stadium, after we went up 17-9, the Giants fans were checked out. I mean, they thought, and I'm not saying they didn't care. I'm saying, like, they were kind of in that catatonic mode of, oh, my God, we just dominated that first half, and we're down 8. How the F did that happen? That was the mentality of the crowd. And, you know, I think if you had asked any of them at that point what's going to happen, I think they would have said, we're going to get blown out, and everybody's going to blame Kevin Gilbride for that horrendous game that he called in the first half. So, you know, we came close. So now we got the Celtics on a winning streak. We have the Bruins and traded deadline coming up. They have a lot of pieces. They have cap room. Quickly, tell America how popular the Bruins are right now locally, because I was stunned when I came home to see all the Bruins stuff last month. I couldn't believe it. It actually feels like they're the number one team right now.
I'll tell you right now, if I open up my office door right now, and if I had a camera on me and you could walk around each office outside here, Bruins gear all over the place. I don't know if it just so happens that I'm at the company that everyone loves the Bruins, but they're huge right now, gigantic. And it hurt this. I'll tell you, the lockout, pardon me, what happened with the NBA this year, that didn't help the Celtics' cause here in Boston. Not one bit. Not even a little bit. So
yeah,
good thing they're on a winning streak now, because they were done from a fan perspective. They were the number four team. They are actually right now.
Yeah, I think they're still number four. Yeah, I agree with you. I think if you look at the NBA teams, who did the lockout hurt, it was really only one team. It was the Celtics, because it gave the Bruins 2 months of basically a free audition to kind of keep all the momentum they had. And on top of it, it has to be I think it's the single most entertaining Bruins team since the teams that I grew up watching in the late 70s. They fight, they score, the games are exciting. I like the players, they have young guys. It's a team I want to watch. I've watched more hockey this year, regular season, than I've watched in the last 10 years. I mean, I can't believe it. I like watching this team so much. I like the product. So, you know, it does seem like, especially if the Red Sox come out slow this year, it does seem like the Bruins could really get a foothold here. And that's kind of what we grew up with. We grew up with Boston was a hockey town and a baseball town, and then they put up with the other two sports, basically.
I remember crying with Norm Levier. I remember crying. I remember.
Yeah.
And you got a guy here that's been here a long time that's starting to get recognition. I mean, he's always been recognized, probably locally, but, you know, Bergeron is playing out of his mind. So, they're definitely maybe, I don't want to say they're the number two team, because I'm thinking the Pats are all number one and Sox number two. Depends on who you talk to. Sox number two and then Bruins, but I don't know, might be a 2 and a 2A right now. I don't think people are really into Sox that much.
I would say with the under 20 crowd, I think the Bruins are like the sexy team.
The guys that I'm referring to outside here, they're all in their 20s, and they are all huge Bees fans. Huge.
Well, huge Bees last fans. Question. Last question, then I'll let you go back to work. Who would you rank number one right now, most popular Boston athlete?
Oh, it's Brady. It's Brady.
Really? He wins the election.
Brady.
We have a presidential election for most popular athlete. Tom Brady wins.
You know what? When you do the elections, it's a long campaign trail. It's not 3 days after a scandal broke. So you're asking right now. I could the easy answer would be, oh, not Brady. Everyone hates him. But you know, in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, in August and September, it's always going to be Brady until he's done playing. It's Brady.
I'm actually happy to hear that. As much as I love young Tyler Seguin, I was worried that he was resting pole position away from Brady potentially.
No,
because of this
no.
Okay.
By the way, you're talking to a guy who's as old as dirt and has been going to the Pats games for 20 years. I open up the door here and I yell out the question. You might get, everyone's going to yell, Seguin. So remember who you're talking to. Brady's freaking awesome, man. He's unbelievable. I can't believe he's getting slim. Go ahead.
I'm glad to hear that. I was worried about the Giselle thing because Boston can be very provincial, as you know. Boston can be spiteful. This is the Brady Giselle and those comments. That's all stuff that just does not play well in Boston at all. I mean, I don't think it plays well in a lot of cities, but I think Boston and Philly and to a lesser degree New York, the three cities where, you know, that could really potentially do some damage. I want to see, obviously, Brady finish his career. I'd hate to ever see a Peyton Manning type situation. And I feel like he's going to, I asked Jonathan Kraft this in the BS report on Friday. It seems like they feel like he's a Patriot for life. I certainly hope that's the case. I would never want to see him play on another team. And for me personally, I think he's on that same level that Bird was at, and Ray Bourque and, you know, Collins, and just anybody I ever grew up watching. It still hurts. I remember we watched Bourque on Colorado that year. I mean, that never felt right. And I just hope that Brady stays.
Oh, Bill, come on now. You can't see him in 2015 starting for the LA whatever they are.
Yeah, that worries me. That worries me. Or the Niners. I think the Niners is another team. You know, we'll see. What happens if Mallett ends up being a stud?
Well, it would be, I don't know much about that guy. They've been talking about him in the papers a little bit the past couple of days, so that's interesting that you bring that up. I see 2015 Pats trading Brady to an LA expansion team for everything. You know, a Herschel Walker type trade, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens there.
I think Brady's going to play for a lot more. I don't think he's one of those guys that walks away at age 36 or whatever. He's never, to my knowledge, has never had a concussion, which.
Nope.
That's the big red flag now with QBs. Like, even you look at Aaron Rodgers, who I think has like three or four concussions in the book. I think Brady's been pretty healthy from that regard. But anyway, all right, Bug.
All right, Bill.
Bug, this cheered me up a little bit. I got to be honest.
Hey, I'm happy. And one thing that did save Brady and Yoko was Paul Pierce last night, too. They've been talking about that on the radio a lot today. So that helped out the cause. We'll see what tomorrow brings. All right, man.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Say hi to those Bruins fans. Talk to you.
All right, bye.
Target percent off.
Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.